Good evening. And welcome to another episode of Black Teachers Matter here on WBCA LP 102.9 FM in Boston. We're Boston's community radio station. I'm your host, Sharon Eaton Hinton, the producer and host for this evening, along with my guests, Dr. Abdi Ali and Simi. We're talking about Write Boston, which is a nonprofit that fosters deep learning for youth and educators. They elevate and reshape the role of literacy, writing, reading, and discussion. And all youth can think critically and use their voice to create change. They also offer professional development and coaching for educators and out-of-school programming for youth. So we are here this evening, and I want to say welcome to my two guests. You're on camera. Look up, Simi. I see you. Look at that beautiful smile and that beautiful face. And my friend and brother and comrade on the front lines, Dr. Abdi Ali. You know, I have to still read about you, Abdi. I have to, so good evening, and you're on camera. And so I'm waving. Now, I want to read this introduction. I did it last night on my other show On Another Level, but you guys are, you know, special. And so I have to talk to you about Abdi Ali, who was appointed. He's been here for a year. He was appointed in May 1st, 2023 by the Board of Directors of Write Boston. So he's the new executive director of Write Boston, and he brings almost three decades of experience in education. He is, he's just amazing. He's trained in educational ethnography under the mentorship of Dr. Sarah Lawrence Lightfoot at the Harvard Graduate School of Education. He has taught students in grades 5 through 12 in five different Boston public schools as an English and humanities teacher. He's a longtime Roxbury resident and founding faculty member of the Boston Arts Academy, where for 13 years he co-designed an interdisciplinary humanities and writing program. Woo-hoo! If I had a laugh track or an applause track, yay, we'd be doing that. He's a graduate of Boston University Creative Writing Program. He studied poetry with Poet Laureate of the United States, Robert Pinsky, and Nobel Prize for Literature recipient Derek Walcott. And prior to joining Write Boston, Dr. Ali led the largest expansion of district-based teacher preparation and licensure programs for paraeducators, career changers, and bilingual candidates. And this multi-generational teacher pipeline established teaching apprenticeships for high school and college students as well. Now, Dr. Ali succeeds Executive Director Sarah Poulter, who led the organization for 6 years and spent 12 years total at Write Boston. But he's at the helm of it. And Write Boston is a 501c3 nonprofit literacy organization that fosters deep learning for youth and educators. It was founded in 2002. So they've been around for a while. This is 2024. We're live here. If you just tuned in, Black Teachers Matter, WBCA LP 102.9 FM in Boston. We're Boston's community radio station on this edition of Black Teachers Matter. Welcome, Dr. Ali. You're a friend of mine, and I've had you. This is the first time I think I've had you downstairs, though. Don't know what downstairs are.
That's right.
But the radio podcast, so how you like it?
Your voice is just amazing.
Thank you.
In my headphones, so it's great. I see what you mean.
Thank you. It is different, right?
Yes, it is.
Now, Write Boston has programming. It's had an impact on more than 1,200 youth in Boston and Massachusetts Gateway City communities. We're going to go a little bit deeper because you have this amazing fundraiser that's happening this Thursday. We're live this evening. And so if people, you know, they can possibly come out and we will show, we'll give information about the event that's happening on this Thursday. So if you're not doing anything and you may decide that you want to have something to do, you can come out to, what is it? It's 890 Commonwealth Avenue?
That's Cityscape? Correct. Yeah,
Cityscape.
City space. WBUR, yes.
WBUR. Oh, that's a beautiful space. I actually learned how to do podcasting with the podcast garage there, yes, like years ago, way before the pandemic. And I also want to say,
you're going to be there.
Yes, I am.
That's
you can
great.
Come meet me and see me. But you're not coming there to meet and see me. You're coming there to meet and see the wonderful, wonderful young people of whom Simi is in the studio. And he is one of the young people. There are 12, I'm looking at, in this brochure, published authors. Meet our published authors. And he's part of Teens in Print. And I looked at this flyer and it says how I went from talentless to one of the talented. So the talented, you know, we're not going to go into W.E.B. Du Bois, Dr. Ali, but...
The talented 10th.
The talented 10th, but he's one of the talented. Welcome, Simi. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
You're good. So tell me, you go to the Brook Charter School, but you live in Dedham, and you are a writer. What made you... But you've actually been with the program since the 8th grade, correct?
Yes.
So what made you want to be a writer, and how did you realize that you're a writer? What's the importance of... Because this is, you know, teens, and you're a teen, and having such... Well, hopefully I can convince you to read something of your work, maybe. I don't know. But we'll take it a step at a time. What made you decide to become a writer? Or how did you know that you were a writer? Because the byline underneath you in this flyer is how I went from talentless to one of the talented. How did you know you were talented? Who told you?
I think, how do I say this? Well, I guess, I'm trying to find into words. But at first, I never really looked at writing as like a career path or even like something like I would like enjoy. Mm-hmm. I always kind of like found literature like to be a boring subject for me in school. Mm. To be honest, I heard of Teens in Print in 8th grade via a teacher. She introduced me to it. It sounds a little cliche, but
No, it doesn't. I'm a teacher. That's what we're here for.
I first joined it because of like the stipend at the end of the 10 weeks. But after like the first, I think like 2 articles I posted, mm-hmm. I realized that like I actually kind of like enjoy it, and I feel like I just stuck with it. Even to like now, I still do write articles. I feel like I find it very fun and like relaxing.
Relaxing. Wow. So talentless. Who told you you were talentless? Or did you just feel I'm bored, so I'm not going to be any good at it?
Well, that article, it took me a while to come up with it, but it was more or less the fact that like people around me I knew had like, I'm going to say like specific talents, but they had like, oh yeah, talents that they like were really good at, whether that's like from birth or just like they just picked up randomly, mm-hmm. while I just felt kind of like, I'm not going to say, I did feel talentless.
Yes, you did. I'm calling you on it.
I felt as if, like, I didn't really have anything that made me, like, special. Mm. I guess there is, like, a part in, like, the article where I speak about how I just kind of, like, tried out for a bunch of different things. And none of those things really stuck, like, unlike Teens in Print for me. Mm. And I feel like that's what really, like, clicked, that, like, this might be my talent. And I believe that it is.
Hmm. So now I was looking at the books that I have here, and I'm not sure if people can really see this on camera. Yep. That's one of them. And this is the book Celebrate the Power of Writing by Wright Boston. And this is Teens in Print. But I looked through these particular books, and you're not in either one of them. So I may have to try to press you to try to say something, but not right now. And this book was... Teens in Print, September to December 2023. Get the latest from Boston's budding journalists. In Community, perspectives from the 2023 Summer Journalism Institute. So you've been
I think Simi
there
might
for
be
a
in
while.
That one.
I didn't see him in this one. I looked. Oh. Maybe we'll during the break, okay. We'll look and see.
Definitely online. You can definitely find.
Okay, great. So I wanted to know, Dr. Ali, you're new to the game in terms of this, in terms of Wright Boston, but you're not new to the game in terms of writing and dealing with teens and dealing with young people. What brought you to Wright Boston?
So after almost 3 decades of working in the Boston Public Schools and really doing some amazing work with colleagues of mine, teachers, educators, social workers, guidance counselors, even custodians, because one of the gifts of my career as a teacher is to see every adult in part of the educational process. Mm-hmm. And so after almost 3 decades of working in grades 5 through 12 and having founded 2 high schools, been like the founding faculty for 2 high schools, it was an important shift in my career to move from the classroom This was just prior to COVID. I think I made that decision like a month before March of 2020, March of 2020. Sorry, am I losing my time here?
It can happen.
Yeah. And then made a decision to think about supporting beginning teachers. Mm-hmm. I had done 25 years in the classroom and then moved into a role as the senior director of Teacher Pipeline Programs, a district-based teacher preparation program that provided licensure and so on. And then 3 years with that work, which was just a very expansive work and meeting a lot of educators and especially bringing teachers into the classroom, former paras of color who wanted to become full-time teachers and general ed teachers. I realized that, you know, there were ways in which the nonprofit space could allow for more agility and innovation, and then made the decision to move to Wright Boston, and it's just been a gift to be in the Wright Boston community. It's an amazing organization that's been around for over 20 years, and having done something quite unique that I think very new nonprofits of our size can do, and that is to think of two literacy programs. It's a one broad literacy project with two different constituencies. One is the teens in Teens in Print, and then the other one is the adult program to support teachers in the classroom and coaches and. And so we are this really fascinating kind of space where we can actually think about literacy in both in-school literacy experiences for young people through working with teachers and also an after-school and summer program for young people directly. And so the combination of that kind of work just really aligned with the work that I was doing in Boston, which gave me tremendous joy. And it was an opportunity to work in a space that could actually, we could do the same kind of work, but with more agility, more innovation, with a broader reach than just in Boston. So Wright Boston's coaches work in as far away as Nantucket Public Schools, where we're supporting a group of educators, middle school teachers in Nantucket, and then we also have a project in Lowell, providing workshops to teachers there. Mm-hmm. And then we're also supporting Boston Public Schools.
And then last year, I'm looking at your website, it says that there were 133 students through after-school and summer programming community partnerships, 137 educators through professional development and coaching in schools and community settings, and 1,200 plus estimated students in the partner classrooms. And then the core value, one of the core values is youth deserve spaces where their perspectives are heard and respected. And it says we, but that's Wright Boston, believe this is central to their personal development and sense of agency. And we know that our communities are better when young people participate. We live this value by centering and amplifying youth voices and by helping young people to become critical thinkers and powerful writers. I'm going to dig into this for a minute.
Sure.
With our young Simi, who is 16. Are you in the 10th grade?
Yes.
I'm trying to calculate this. Okay. Because I was at the Brook teaching 8th grade, so I'm trying to calculate that in my head. So you've been writing for a while. Has your writing... First, I want to ask you if you think teen voices are different, period. And then how different is it when it's writing? So do you think teen voices are different? I believe that they're different, but I'm a grown-up. So I get accused of adulting, like, all the time. So do you think teen voices are different? In what ways are teen voices different?
I definitely think that they are different. I feel like, well, everybody's voices are different. I feel like everybody has their own different, like, opinions, whether, like, I feel like no one's opinions are the exact same, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like for teens especially because of two things, I feel like. Well, because we're the generation that, like, kind of grew up with, like, technology at our fingertips.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, like, things, like, whether that's, like, politics-wise or just, like, economic things, like, those things are, like, really common for us to, like, know about. And I feel like at our, like, age now, it's, like, we know about it now so early, in that, like, since we, like, can, like, look things up within, like, a few seconds without mm-hmm. having to, like, read, like, a super large textbook, I feel like that makes it where we, I guess, we learn things at a faster rate. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that definitely, like, I feel like that definitely adds to the point that, like, we have a different, like, voice than others, especially, like, adults, I would have to say. Yeah.
So I know you guys, you actually, I have a young daughter, but she's not a teenager anymore. And so you guys, you use different technology, you use different platforms, you use different languages, but because that's what you're supposed to do. And for those of us who are older, and Dr. Ali, I can speak for him because I know him, is young in spirit. Those of us who are young in spirit, we recognize the value of your voices and the difference between when we were your age in terms of what was actually happening. And so I was just reading again the website, 218 articles published on teensinprint.com. 82% of students felt more prepared for future jobs after Teens in Print. 85% of students felt they could better express their opinions and ideas. How do you see, because some of you have been doing news and some of you covering community events and creative writing. So there's a plethora, I'll use that word, plethora of different types of styles of writing. What is the type of writing that you love, that you feel connected to? Simi.
I think, well, one type of writing that I feel like I tend to go for, whether or not like it's on purpose, is definitely more creative writing. I feel like creative writing, especially like, I guess, op-eds, which are like opinion writings, mm-hmm. I like the most, because you can, I guess you get to share your opinion about something that's like, even if it's like not a super like major topic at the moment, I feel like you can still share your opinion on it and like kind of give your point of view.
What are some of the topics that are at the forefront that you've been thinking about that you think are important, that are either community related, globally related right now?
Right now?
Mm-hmm. I know I put you on the spot, right? I just, boom.
I guess, well, that's a little sneak peek for one of my articles that I'm writing right now, but
Wait. Can you give us a peek about that? Can you talk a little bit about the one that you're working on right now?
Yeah, it actually relates to your question. Mm-hmm. So one thing I feel like should be really like, I'm gonna say at the forefront, but I feel like it's definitely really important. And it is definitely like well documented, but like nothing's being happened to fix it. Is like the pink tax. I'm writing an article on now. For those who don't know, it's pretty much like a tax that's affected, like that affects primarily like women. It can affect things simply down to like body care, clothing, children's toys, like really simple things that like really should not be affected like at all. Like even though it is very well documented and stuff like that, I feel like it's not spoken about as well. I feel like it should definitely be, like, more, like, I guess, what's the word? Like, it should definitely be more talked about, and I feel like we should start doing things to, like, actually, like, change it. Mm-hmm. Even though it's well, like, documented, it's not, nothing's being, well, so far what I know, nothing has been, like, in place to fix it.
So do you consider yourself, like, a journalist, activist? Where are you, 'cause you've got a couple of years to think about. Sort of. If you want to go to college, if you want to go to journalism, has this sparked like a writing bug in you to take it further?
Most certainly. I feel like I'm not going to like say it's confirmed I want to be a journalist when I'm older. I feel like it is definitely like a career path that like I am like certainly thinking on. It's definitely like one of my like, I say like big three.
Nice. One of the other core values, Dr. Abdi Ali, is empowering literacy.
Yes.
And Write Boston believes that literacy, reading, writing, and discussion is empowering. Literacy-rich experiences help learners build further skills to advance their educational, personal, and community goals. And the organization lives that value by honoring the language assets and backgrounds the young people bring, and inspire youth and educators as well. And there's that rich background of mm-hmm. youth and educators. So mm-hmm. I want you to talk a little bit about, you know, another one of your core values and how that environment of youth and educators, in addition to what you're about to ask Simi. Yeah.
Okay. So okay, can I ask, because I'm really curious about the pink tax.
Go ahead.
So if I understand what's happening, that, as you describe, is highly documented but not talked about, there are certain products that women tend to buy that are taxed.
Yes. And so more expensive.
And more expensive. So give me an example of a product.
Actually, while I was like in the field, like I think like a week ago, I like went to Target in South Bay, and there was a like directly like clear image of it. I took a picture of it, by the way. Okay. But for an example, like spray on deodorant, like the women's was like almost $10 for a single canister, while the men's was like almost half the price. I think the men's was like $7, while the women's were like almost $10.
Wow.
And
okay.
So
women are paying $3 more than...
Precisely. And wow. Then the worst part is that there was a two-pack for like men's like spray-on deodorant.
Okay.
And it was still less than the women's single deodorant.
Oh, my goodness.
See, you guys are men. So I've always known this, and there's actually legislation around that. And,
okay.
And it extends even to... menstrual products. There had to be legislation to actually have that available in schools, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. is crazy because you've got all these women. Right. And whether or not the women should actually, there had to be legislation and policy changes so that the young ladies, including the teachers as well, didn't have to bring quarters and stuff like that to pay for it in the schools. It should be offered. So that's, I'm with you, Simi.
Yeah.
I got
so
you,
this
bro.
This is like really making me think about, there is already a highly documented and important issue of the income gap, mm-hmm. right?
That's right.
So you have the income gap that's gender-based, right? And then now you have women are paying higher rates for products that they use that are essential products for them.
And get paid less.
And they get paid less.
And the quality is not as good if you look at pants. Even the way positioning of pockets, and there's a whole history behind pockets and pants with women. I'm with you, Simi.
Yeah. So this really connects to the core values that you've been referencing, and I really appreciate that, Sister Hinton. And I think this is the other core value is justice. So we have transformative learning, empowering literacy, youth voice, and justice. And I'm looking forward to reading your articles, especially this one about the pink tax.
And so the other question I asked you, Dr. Abley,
yes.
And if you just tuned in, you're listening to Black Teachers Matter here on WBCA LP 102.9 FM in Boston. We're Boston's community radio station. This is Black Teachers Matter, and I have a Black teacher and maybe a future teacher. I don't know. Speaking into existence, Simi, in the studio with us here this evening at WBCA LP 102.9 FM. Yeah. So I wanted to talk to you about the other question that I asked you, Dr. Ali.
Yes.
The chemistry and the importance of having educators and supporting and that whole the cooperative kinds of learning and that back and forth kinds of learning that happens between real educators, real teachers, because everybody that has a, you know, has that title isn't necessarily a good one.
Sure.
And there's also, like Malcolm said, you know, if I put, you know, kittens in the oven doesn't make them muffins. So just because you have teachers in the classroom doesn't make them good.
Yeah.
Talk about the chemistry and the support between the educators that you have in this program, right, Boston, and the students.
So I think, and I'm going to be, I'm going to push back a little bit in terms of like our understanding of what educators are doing in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the key tenets of and pillars of our work at Wright Boston is that we actually have a very asset-based view of both educators and young people.
Mm-hmm.
And so we resist deficit.
Can you explain that? Because I know what that means.
Yes.
But.
So there are lots of policies and practices in schools right now that fundamentally do not approach educators as professionals and knowledgeable people prepared to educate children. And so there's this effort to sort of really, really malign the common sense, the intellectualism of educators in working with young people. It's a very, very reductive space, both, you know, at the highest levels, but also in terms of the ways in which teachers are managed and governed and supervised and as a Black educator, surveilled. I've seen that sort of kind of, that level of surveillance and the use of the evaluation system as a way to really, really advance the narrative that teachers are not capable, that they are not capable of educating children.
Mm-hmm.
So we resist that. I think that's part of what we mean by empowering literacy and transformative learning. I think the collaborative space that you're talking about, that you're describing about Wright Boston and its approach to literacy, is that first and foremost, we're a student-centered approach in educating young people and even inviting educators to really think deeply about what it means to be student-centered. And one of them is just being curious about the questions that young people have that they bring to the classroom. And then from curiosity, we invite our educators to really think about knowledge creation,
mm-hmm.
And not just knowledge consumption.
And now, what does that look like?
So for example, the fact that Simi somehow, I don't know how the pink tax came to Simi's consciousness or awareness, but it was this, it was something that somehow Simi got familiar with. I'd love to hear the backstory about that. And then went and pursued, and you heard him say, oh, I actually did a field study on this. I went and compared products at a local store.
Mm-hmm.
And that level of curiosity and the space to empower Simi to go and actually do the research, to do the field work, and then to come back and then say, oh, yeah, and this is, by the way, really documented, which means that Simi has done some research. So the fact that a student like Simi, a 10th grader, is able to feel empowered to pursue the questions that have emerged about the pink tax is consistent across the board in terms of how we approach journalism and storytelling and our young reporters in the Teens in Print program.
Now, tell me a little bit more about, because you're talking about space, and I know that the space, the working space that you have for Wright Boston is on Amory Street in Jamaica Plain.
That's right.
And tell me about the hours that it's available for educators and for students.
Thank you for asking that question. So this is a recent move. We moved in February of this year to the Amory Street site. And we're still working out, like, how do we make the space available? But here's the key thing. Back to the sort of knowledge creation and space. Our young people, our teens in print right now, there are a group of students this afternoon who are at Babson College. So they're in college settings where we're using college classrooms to actually socialize for young people that this is the space that they belong, that they belong in and that they deserve to be in. And then another group of students are across a couple of blocks away at the Boston Business Journal.
Mm.
And they're using the Boston Business Journal newsroom and really embodying, there's an embodied dimension to our work, embodying the identity of a reporter, a storyteller, an aspiring journalist. And so what we try to do, both in terms of the orchestration of the learning, but also in the design of the space, is to really create opportunities for young people to actually develop their writer's identity, however they choose to define it. For Simi, it's a combination of creative writing and some storytelling. For another student, it's entirely something quite different. But this is the sort of the knowledge creation part of our work, which is something that I think, in contrast, imagine writing where you have to fill in the blank kind of writing, or you're given a worksheet and you're asked to essentially repeat what somebody has told you to repeat, right? That is by way of, you know, a form of knowledge regurgitation, knowledge consumption, and then you just spit it back out. That's not the kind of education that young people need to create careers for themselves that are fulfilling and sustainable. And so, you know, there are a number of ways we can think about this knowledge creation process.
Mm-hmm.
But I think one of the key pieces for us is to actually empower young people to say, hey, you have a question, go pursue that question. Go find the research and the other folks who have thought about this similar kind of question. And tell us what you learned in that process.
Mm. And also one of the core values that's on your website, if people want more information, they can go to www.writebostion.org or teensinprint.com if you want more information. And we are here at WBCA 102.9 FM in Boston, Boston's community radio station. I'm here with my guest, Dr. Abdi Ali and Simi. Write Boston is a nonprofit that fosters deep learning for youth and educators and elevates the reshaping of literacy, writing, reading, and discussion so that all youth think critically and can use their voice to create change. Teens in Print is Write Boston's after-school and summer writing program, and it was created to amplify the marginalized voices of Boston teens, and they strive to give students the tools to effectively share their stories, the platform to reach decision makers, and the knowledge to become thoughtful consumers of media. You're in tune to Black Teachers Matter here at WBCA LP 102.9 FM. And we're going to take a short break and we'll be back right after this.
Psychologist, social worker, drug expert, sex counselor, substitute parent, and friend. Now, those are some of the things teachers have to be before they even get down to teaching. Now, the more you know what it takes to be a teacher these days, the more you realize that it's one of the toughest, most important jobs in the world. So what can you do to thank your teacher? It's simple. Learn.
This newspaper's got good news and bad news. The good news is that it's loaded with jobs for accountants and lawyers and nurses and carpenters and every other kind of skilled worker. The bad news is that there isn't a single ad for a school dropout, at least nothing you'd want. The more you know how tough things are for school dropouts, the more you'll see you have no choice. You have to stay in school. Think about it.
I can't believe that some of you guys still think it's cool to drink and drive. Well, read my lips. Anybody that's going to drive me home has got to be in condition to get me there in one piece. The more you know how I feel about drinking and driving, the more you know that if you drink and drive, I'm not going anywhere with you. But if you happen to be the designated driver, well, you can take me home anytime.
I don't know. Help me out here. It's a punching bag, right? I mean, it doesn't talk, it doesn't laugh. It sure doesn't give you a hug when you need one. Yet some of you insist on mistaking your children for it. How's that possible? I mean, when you hit a punching bag, it doesn't cry.
Back in the fifth grade, I had a favorite school pastime. Teacher torture. Poor Mrs. Sheldon Fry. I left fake vomit on her desk, set off stink bombs at lunch, painted the class hamster light blue, and the thing was, I liked Mrs. Sheldon Fry, and she liked me. And I learned a lot that year. So, to all the teachers who helped kids learn in spite of themselves, thanks. And to Mrs. Sheldon Fry, did you ever find those dead frog parts?
Some guys will try to tell you that hanging out on the street and messing with guns gets you respect. Well, they're wrong. They're dead wrong. Because sooner or later, you're going to kill someone. And you're going to do time for it. Or someone's going to blow you away because they know you're armed. Don't kid yourself, man. You know what happens to guys who carry guns. Wise up. It's your life we're talking about. Don't let a gun kill your future.
And we're back here at WBCA LP 102.9 FM in Boston. We're Boston's community radio station. I'm your host, Sharon Eaton Hinton. And it's Black Teachers Matter. But we're also here with Write Boston and Teens in Print, my guests, Dr. Abdi Ali, the magnificent Dr. Abdi Ali, and the magnificent Simi. I'm calling it that he is just going to be like the writer. And I'm, you know, I don't know if it's Pulitzer, you know, what's going to happen here, but I'm seeing good stuff happening. I also want to let you know about the event that is happening May 23rd. This is Tuesday. It's 2 days away from here. And if you don't have anything to do, it's called Prose and Conversations. Celebrate Literacies of Belonging with Write Boston. That's Thursday, May 23rd, 2024, from 5:30 to 8:30, City Place, 890 Commonwealth Avenue. And Commonwealth Avenue is, so it's Brighton, Brookline, Boston, but it's Commonwealth Avenue. It's like Boston University's campus, sort of. It's across the street, and it's called City Space. So if you don't have anything that you've scheduled, or if you believe that celebrating the power of writing and teens is more important, then you might want to stop by. You can stop by. If you need more information, you can look at, if you've got some time, teensinprint.com or www.writebostn. There is no space in between that, writeboston.org. So let me just say welcome back to my guests here. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Young
yeah,
King
this is
and
great.
Young King and OG King. That's what we're talking about right here. You know, let's talk about get back and pick up to the whole literacy piece. And we talked about before the break transformative learning.
Sure.
Living through the value. You've got partnerships with schools and districts, community organizations, educators, and youth.
That's
and
right.
I'm definitely going to become more involved as an educator around my doctoral studies. So, I mean, I got to balance, you know, work-life balance, right? But powerful learning experiences that are engaging, empowering, and inclusive, and programming that taps into talents and knowledge and identities of all learners, youth and educators. So we're talking about teens in print, but we're also talking about educators that I guess you can be as, I don't know if you have to be 21. No, you have to. So do you have to have a bachelor's degree to actually be one of the educators involved in the program?
Not really. I think because the youth development space has a range of educators, and we really value the community education project, where we believe anyone and everyone should be an educator and is an educator. So our staff have all their bachelors, but you know, I don't think it's a prerequisite to work in this space to have a bachelor's degree. And in fact, I think people who come from a range of different fields and experiences and life journeys have a place at Write Boston to support, to volunteer their time with us and to be part of the educational project with us. The thing I wanted to come back to, if it's okay, it was just this really the work that we're trying to do at Write Boston, which is to approach educators with humility, to dignify their work.
Right.
I think part of the challenge with the retention of Black educators in particular and with Black and Brown educators is that they are not dignified for their knowledge and their linguistic capacities, their cultural competencies that they bring into the classroom. And I think in my time in the classroom, there was systematic marginalization of that voice and that intelligence and that genius. Because that same genius runs through Black and Brown children. And
you have to say young people,
young people.
Know, because I'm saying this as a middle school teacher. If I called them children, they were upset. And some of these children were hairier and taller than me. So young people,
Yeah.
See, Simi's laughing. Yeah. He's like, yep.
yeah. But you know, but in a broader sense, there are children, and there are young people, and there are and they need to be in spaces where they feel like the values, mm-hmm. the practices are aligned and affirming and uplifting.
Right.
And so this is our work with our coaches this year. We have four fabulous coaches who decided that they were going to focus on really identifying, naming ideologies that are ensconced in white supremacy, and really surfacing that and identifying that and lifting that and naming it, and then doing something about it with the teachers, but with an approach that actually empowers teachers to identify, to reflect, to look inwards. Because as you know, systems of domination really deeply imprint themselves in our consciousness. And we have to do the daily work of excavating and looking at our own biases. Even I, as a black man, I'm filled with biases. And sometimes I have to stop and say, where's that coming from? Where did I learn to think that way? Because in the better version of myself would not accept that sort of thinking or practice or action for myself. So it's a lot of reading, it's a lot of reflection, but it's also being able to be vulnerable with colleagues who can observe that work, respect your journey, but also call you in, and sometimes call you out about some of these sort of imprints of domination in our consciousness, and really really doing the kind of deliberative work that Martin Luther King talks about, right? That the process of doing structural system change requires a lot of deliberation and a lot of conversation in community with people that are aligned with the same values and see the world in the way that it can be and not the way it is right now.
I want to talk to Simi again. One of the core values on your website, Right Boston, is about justice and young people's learning experiences that can enrich their lives and equip them with tools they need to create positive change. And living in a learning space and using a learning space to resist and interrupt longstanding patterns of marginalization and oppression. And Simi, you brought up about the pink tax, which I've known about for a while because, you know, I'm a woman. What can I say? But do you feel empowered to do what you're... Do you feel supported in this empowerment through some certain tools that you get at Right Boston and in Teens in Print?
I do. I feel like whenever I like bring up a new topic, I feel like that's like especially like an important topic like the pink tax. I feel like either there's people who don't know about it and like want to learn about it and like want this to be like expressed, or people who like knew about it but want like a deeper like explanation on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So now when you're writing, what's the process of writing? You just see something, it piques your interest, then you start to research it, or you just start to learn more about it, and you just start to write about it. What's your process?
Well, first, whenever we like have the idea of something, we write a pitch on it. Once it's like, I guess once the pitch is like approved of something that's like newsworthy, or if the pitch is approved, then we like continue on with like the research stage of it, and then after the research, depending on like the article, but I know for my article, after I did research, I then went out into the field, mm-hmm. to get like real world experiences and like local neighborhoods and stuff like that, and then pretty much from there on, you use what you gathered and what you learned to then write about the topic.
Thank you. Dr. Ali, on the website, it says 79% of educators reported deeper student engagement as a result of coaching, and 93% of educators reported that coaching helped them better serve all their students. What constitutes the coaching at Right Boston for educators?
So first and foremost, our approach with each school partner is to really align and hear more about what their needs are and then align our work with them based on those needs. And this is part of the challenge that we face at Right Boston is that we customize our approach to each school site and then do a deeper customization based on teacher needs and priorities. So sometimes, you know, when we do reporting for foundations, we have to spend a lot of time describing that we can't do an apples-to-apples comparison from one school to the next. Because as you know, having worked in lots of different schools, that each school has a unique set of mission, a unique set of community and students, and then no two classrooms are the same. So what we try to do is to spend a lot of time building the relationships, building the rapport with educators, and identifying a plan together, co-constructing a plan with the educators that will best serve them to achieve their goals with their students. The primary output of all of that is to really make sure that students are learning and engaged and thinking critically and deeply about things that matter to them and matter to their teacher. So there's a high, we describe ourselves as on the ground, embedded in the work of teachers and in schools. And then from there, what we try to do is talk about our coaching theory of change approach is that we think about our work with a particular educator or school as evolving over 3 years. So that once we spend time with the same educator, with the same classroom, in the same school, we begin to see practices shifting, mindsets and shifts and changes in thinking and in design of the curriculum. So we value the time that we spend over multiple years with an educator, and for the most part, we've been able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
To stay embedded in one school for example, Boston International Newcomers Academy, we've been there for some time and have really, really developed a set of relationships and knowledge base to really support the multilingual students at Binka. Unfortunately, we haven't been able to sort of sustain that level of engagement across other schools. And it's primarily because, you know, we have to raise the funds to find the resources.
I was going to bring you there.
Yeah. Yeah, we have to raise the funds to find the resources to support schools, especially schools that are under-resourced and where educators feel really challenged to meet the needs of their students.
You know, I want to say that while you were talking, I'm used to multitasking. I'm a black woman. And I actually signed up on the website.
Okay.
If someone is interested, they can call to get more information, 617-541-2604. Or you can visit the website, www.writeboston.org. Or you can look up online, teensinprint.com. If you just tuned in, we've got about 5 minutes left. See how time flies when you're having fun? And if you just tuned in, we're at WBCA LP 102.9 FM in Boston. You're listening to another episode of Black Teachers Matter on Boston's community radio station. I'm here with Dr. Abdi Ali, who is the executive director of Write Boston. He's at Write Boston for about the first year, coming around to actually a little bit more than the first year. And we hope he just continues to really, really do well along with the young people there. I have a question for you, Simi, in the last few moments. You're a teenager now, but teendom doesn't last long. What are the plans that you have going forward? I think you talked to me about UMass Amherst and what else?
I was planning to go to UMass Amherst. I feel like it was just a really good school for me. That's the school I hope I go to when I graduate.
Mm-hmm.
For career path, not fully sure yet.
Are you going to come back to Teens in Print and Write Boston?
Probably, most likely.
You know, I had to put that in there, Dr. Ali.
Yes, and can I should? There's actually a really interesting project that we, my colleague Elvis Alvarado, who is a program facilitator at Teens in Print, Simi knows Elvis really well, but Elvis has launched a project called the Youth Leaders Program. So this is an opportunity for college students, former tipsters, but also college students who are studying communications and journalism to join us in the work, and we actually stipend them. So Simi, if he wants to stay connected with us, my colleague Mohammed, program director of Teens in Print, always encourages young people to actually expand their experiences. Sometimes, you know, I know Simi's been with us since eighth grade, but you know, oftentimes we encourage them to actually try out other experiences, because I think that is an important part of your development as a writer, to pursue other opportunities and then to come back. But if Simi chooses during college, by the way, I'm a UMass Boston graduate, so welcome to the UMass system. UMass Amherst was one of my choices, but I couldn't afford the room and board, so I stayed in Boston.
Okay, so I have to give a plug to Northeastern University. I'm a Husky. Woof. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so... Yeah, so we have this youth leader program, and we pay you know, minimum wage for college students to come and work with us in the summer or an after school setting.
And then the teens also get paid to work with you too, correct?
That's correct. And Simi can talk more about that.
Well, Simi, you got like 2 minutes. Well, actually a minute as we come down to the end of the program. How would you like to talk to young people your age or a little bit older, a little bit younger? I'm thinking about the younger people who I actually, when I Googled the information about Write Boston, writing in teens and journalism, there were people who were published authors as early as 9, 10, 11, 12. How would you like to encourage some of your peers if they're thinking about writing?
I would say definitely like try it out. I know journalism is not for everybody. There's people at my school who tried it, but it didn't really stick for them. I feel like it's still something you should just try out, just even if you're not sure, or just to, like, I guess, you should just try it out. It's really fun. Teens in Print's a good organization, and you just want to, like, try it out so you know that, like, even if you don't like it, you can say you at least tried it.
It's awesome. And Dr. Ali, if you want to give some last words.
Yes, I would say to every student out there, young person out there, if you are keeping a journal, keep doing it. If you're writing... If you have a collection of poetry that you've been writing for a long time, just keep doing it. And please, please know that some of the writing that you're being asked to do in the classroom is not what writing is.
Mm.
There's a whole range of writing exercises and topics that are rich and fulfilling and not as boring as what you're being served in the classroom. So keep that journal going. Keep that poetry book. Simi, do you write poetry?
No, I'm not
okay. Or even like if you are also like working on a graphic novel on your own time, keep plugging away. And then you're more than welcome to enjoy join us at Teens in Print and try out some of your skills with us.
And also the event that is happening a couple of days from now, the basic information. You want to give a little shout out, real quick shout out.
Sure. Yes. Yeah, so May 23rd, Thursday, 5:30 p.m. The first thing that you'll experience is an opportunity to engage with our writers, our Teens in Print writers, and ask them questions about their writing journey. And then from there, the program shifts to a panel of amazing professional writers, Carmen Fields, Portia Oliwala, Boston Poet Laureate, and Dr. Kimberly Parker, who's written extensively about empowering literacy and literacy for liberation. But Carmen Fields is an amazing pioneering journalist. So what we're trying to do is bring together writers to mentor our young writers.
Okay, and I want to say right now, thank you very much for being here this evening in Black Teachers Matter. You're listening to...
Thank you.
You're listening to WBCA 102.9 FM in Boston. We're your Boston's community radio station. I'm your host at Black Teachers Matter, Sharon Eaton Hinton. And thank you, Dr. Abdi Ali and Simi. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.